Algar Productions.
This is the Post-Atomic Horror, the most comprehensive Star Trek podcast ever produced. Your hosts are Ron Algar Watt and Maggie Robotham. Episode 490, Dos Cerritos and Shades of Green.
Hi, friends. Welcome to the Post-Atomic Horror. I'm Al.
I'm Maggie.
And we're in the final season of Lower Decks.
Yeah, if it's going to get good, now's the time.
Well,
running out of episodes.
Bad news for
show.
Got some bad news for you.
Uh-huh.
I mean, these were both okay.
Both of these were perfectly exceptional. Good God.
Exceptional. No.
No. They were perfectly acceptable.
Much
episodes
better, yes.
of Lower Decks. You know, I didn't hate them as much as some, except for some parts that I did.
Mm-hmm.
I could definitely be having a better time doing other things.
I walked away saying, ugh, I didn't like those. But then going back through my notes, I pointed out a lot of stuff that I liked. And I think I do that as I go, just so that I'm not bitching for an hour every week.
Yeah, which is smart, because I definitely a lot of the time come into this and just like, all right, how are you going to piss me off this week, Lower Decks? Started real quick this week.
Well, something I've discovered is when we started this, I felt a little more favorably toward the show than you did. And as we go, I think you're warming to it a little, and I am not.
Yeah, we're really moving away. We've talked about this a few times. Stockholm Syndrome may not be real, but, you know, like,
well,
I'll take what I can get
case.
To not spend this spend a year depressed, or at least not depressed about fucking Star Trek.
We're almost done, though. That's
the thing.
Is like we got 4 more weeks of this. And, you know, like, even if every episode is like, I don't know, badgy versus bad next gen references, it's still 4 weeks. We could do that. Like, I've said this before, but we got through Enterprise. We could do this show standing on our heads.
No, listen.
I'm not going to do it standing on my head. But
no, it feels like a weird thing to spend your time doing.
Yeah, also, I got the mic set for me sitting the regular way.
Mm-hmm. It's like, do I have to move it down now? Or, like, how long can I stay like this? The blood is rushing my head, and it's really hard to read my summary.
Mm-hmm. Might clear my sinuses, though.
That is true.
All right, so let's get into it. Why don't you tell us about Dos Cerritos?
So the Cerritos is exploring a mysterious space hole that leads to another dimension. Oh, God, please not the Mirror Universe. Please not the Mirror Universe. We're so, so due for a Mirror Universe episode on this show, and I simply cannot deal with sexy lesbian Boimler. I cannot, and I shall not do it. Anyway, so it's not the Mirror Universe, thank God. It's just a universe. And in this crazy universe, Boimler has a beard, Mariner is the captain, and Rutherford is, I guess, like 80% robot, which regular clunk, Rutherford clunk. Thinks is pretty fucking cool, and I assure you it is not. After much mucking about and arguments between the two crews about whose universe is real, sorry, evil Cerritos, it's you guys, the Cerritos returns home. Unfortunately, Captain Mariner has kidnapped Beckett Mariner and left her on her ship so that she can go back to her relaxing life of yelling, screaming, and talking about those 3 episodes of TNG that everyone has seen. And before you ask, no, Captain Mariner is actually an asshole fascist, and surprisingly not less annoying than our Mariner. I know, I was shocked too. And her crew is quite happy to arrest her when they find out about the swap. Meanwhile, Tendi excels at being a pirate captain while attempting to keep her victims alive and accidentally starts a space war with the Blue Orions from the animated series. I miss you, Tendi. Come home soon.
I mean, we'll get into this. I'm not a huge fan of that subplot, but this has led to lots more Tendi on screen because her plots are entirely about her and they take up almost half the episode.
Yeah, we basically get like half the episode. It's like the show finally realized, oh, this is the person people want to pay attention to.
I just wish she was back on the ship. And she will be. Like, look, spoilers for the next episode, but I said she'll be off the ship for 2 episodes and then she'll come back, and that's exactly what happened. So, you know.
Good work, Al.
Yes. Identifying basic patterns of everything ever. Yeah, I'm a clever person.
You say that, but I'm real bad at it, so...
That's not true.
Patterns
you'll call out
hard.
Stuff that I missed all the time. That's not true at all, especially with Star Trek. We've watched so many of these things, and particularly a show that deliberately mimics the other shows.
That is true.
it's pretty easy to figure out where they're going with most things. That's when it gets me the most. Like when it wins me over the most is when they feel like they're doing that and then they swerve. But none of that here. So
no, of course not. That would
this
be
is pretty
good
standard stuff
and entertaining. Yeah. This is much less entertaining.
I didn't hate it.
I didn't hate it either. But like, ugh. There was also some stuff I really hated.
Yeah. Well, let's get. What was your good thing?
So bringing in the blue Orions from the animated series is actually a really great thing to put into this episode. Like, once again, I love whenever they remember something from the animated series and stick it in here and just like
absolutely
welding the two things together. It's like, yeah, we also have, I guess, blue Orions who say the name differently, and let's just say they hate each other, and these guys wear these weird little fucking Jack Kirby looking costumes and shoot lasers.
Okay, for this is a fairly deep cut. For those of you who don't remember, this is from the animated series, and also some people skip the animated series. Like Tilo said, look, I love Star Trek. I've sat through a lot of bad Star Trek, but the animated series hurts my eyes. I just can't. And like, that, I get it.
That's fair. There's some great stuff on that show, though. It's deeply stupid.
There's some fun stuff. There's some genuinely good stuff, and there's a lot of just
this.
So the head of Filmation, I believe Lou Scheimer was his name.
That sounds familiar.
Because he also did He-Man and a million other shows.
Yeah,
Filmation did. Famously colorblind. Apparently, really nice guy, but in charge of an animation studio and colorblind. That's probably why the Orions were rendered in a much more of a blue shade than green. And then I'm pretty sure they were addressed as Orions in those episodes because Shatner said it that way, insisted it was pronounced that way. And, you know, don't correct him. It sickens. We've all heard the tapes.
Oh, did Bill have an issue with the way something is pronounced? Shocking. Shocking.
Well, this is just you insisting, no, that's the Canadian spelling. Like early in our friendship, you'd say, no, that's how we do it in Canada. And then you don't do that anymore because I spent a lot of time with Canadians. And also, I could just look it up. But
it's real easy to prove that I'm lying to you now.
But this show, you're right, taking two things that were kind of mistakes and saying, no, this is canon, this works. Like, we've always enjoyed that we used to call them like no prize explanations. Like, let's go in and say, no, this wasn't a mistake. It exists in universe and here's why. And I like that kind of thing.
It's one of the things that like most interests me with Star Trek. And like, this is the thing we used to do on the show. Or on Endeavor, it's like, okay, none of this makes sense, so we figure out a way for it to make sense, you know? I love that. I love that so much. And this is a great example of that.
The show, when it's on, does that. When it's not, it will just point it out and say, boy, this sure doesn't make sense. Let's just keep doing it that way. And like,
It's like, yeah, that's not
so
fun.
You're criticizing it, but you have the opportunity to fix it or explain it, and you're not doing that.
Yeah, like... Again, you made the show canon. That means like whatever weird thing you figure out goes on the website. Like that's
yeah.
The
these
stuff,
Orions
man.
Are now. That's it. They're now like that's what it is. And you know, having two factions formerly part of the same culture who have split, like that's very Star Trek.
Yep.
So you know.
Yeah, it's a good idea. You know.
It was a good pull. Of course, as you pointed out, they just made them like dumb guys again.
Yeah, they're just dumb guys. Like it's just the Packlids all over again. Just like we will win. Like really? It's like, guys, you already did that joke. Like you based the whole season around it. Fucking I don't know, give us something else. Something new, maybe.
I think what they were going for is they were the men and they were the dumb men and the smart ladies would like you know, beat them because they're smarter.
Well, in that case, like, you need to make some jokes about that.
I agree.
Like, you know, something.
So my good thing, the good thing I wrote here is actually a second bad thing. So I'm gonna skip that for a moment. If you Maggie, are reading along, don't worry about that. Mm-hmm. But I like, first, relating to this, that they took one of the only good things Enterprise came up with, which was... Yes. let's do a fix on this Orion slave girl thing, because that's...
We do not like that.
Of all of the shows to do this, Enterprise was the one I would not expect, because they're just like, yes, let's run with the misogyny and the torture and, you know, like...
I mean, it was famously their favorite thing.
Yes, but they did fix this. They said, in a typically convoluted way, but they said, like, no, the women are actually the powerful ones and the men are actually kind of stupid and there's a pheromone thing and all that. And it was a dumb explanation, but they did fix it a little bit.
Yes.
And running with that here and making all the Orions like Tendi, you know, like young, very capable women and fighting these big, lumbering, stupid Orion dudes. That's not bad.
Yeah.
And I like that. But I still find all of this exceptionally boring. Like, every alien culture in Star Trek is just from the Ren Fest, you know? It's like, you got the Klingons in their armor and their swords, and these guys in their leather and their swords. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, okay, you know what? Yes, they do look sexy. And yes, it's sexy in a non-exploitive way. That's great. Mm-hmm. But... it's just more swords, man. Come on, dude.
I
like,
really
we're
want
in
to see
space in the future.
I really want to see that as like a label you slap on videos at the video store. It's just more swords, man, and then a little picture of your face.
Mm-hmm. Angry, of course.
Mm-hmm.
I don't mind if there's one like that, but it's I complain all the time that it doesn't feel like we're in the future, because this show just like in these episodes, there's people putting on T-shirts that say silly catchphrases and like a shirt you would buy now. Mm-hmm. There's a flashback at the beginning of the next episode to Tendi and Tendi's sister basically dressed like 90s girls at a slumber party. Like they might as well have had side ponytails. Like it was I never feel like I'm in the future, and I never feel like they're aliens at all. And like, yes, of course, science fiction is meant to relate to you now, but can't you dress it up a little bit?
I mean, I don't love like I don't love any of the like taken directly from today. Like the T-shirt stuff always really bugs me. I hate that kind of thing.
Yep. But that's your workout clothes. That's okay.
But and I mean that makes more sense than the weird TNG era leotards, you know?
Well, although, I think those were just their personal outfits. I guess those were their personal outfits. They weren't like these are ship issue. Like if you look at guys in the Navy now, they have things like that they wear when they're, you know, working out or doing PT, they call it. Like just like they probably have the name of the ship they're serving on their shirt. Like it makes sense.
Yeah.
But anyway.
But the alien races with stuff from history just always feels like, ugh, we got to give these guys something. The pirates or Vikings or I don't know, samurai, like, whatever.
I get that it's hard to come up with something, and it's also too like alienating to come up with something so weird that it feels more genuine. But like the Cardassians are just like Orwell. They're just 1984.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's a thing from Earth, but then they took it and they made it like a whole thing. And like, to me that worked a lot better than just, I don't know.
They gave them amusement centers.
Yep. We said these guys are pirates. So what if they all just like sailed around and had curved swords and
I mean, this is the thing. It's like, is there anything other than pirates? No, there isn't.
No, that's whole culture.
The whole thing is based on pirates. Really? Like, you know, people get up to other things. No, they don't.
I don't entirely hate that, because the whole point of Tendi is I don't want this. I want something else. So like, I don't mind a one-off go back home and realize, oh no, I made the right choice. This isn't what I want.
Well, but then we're
spending a lot of time in it. So
yeah. Well, and also then we get into like her whole crew, who apparently none of whom want to be pirates. And like then I'm just watching like, does anyone want to be pirates in this pirate society? Like, did you guys just get real into piracy by accident and now you're stuck?
I didn't hate that. I didn't hate. She's like, could you guys please stop trying to murder people? Like, I'm like, Tendi's discreetly going behind them and using like the tricorder and stuff to like heal the wounds. Like, she stabbed you in the gut here. Sorry about that.
Yeah. And I like that.
And
a lot.
So she tells. Yeah. And she tells them, like, why are you, you know, why are you doing this? And they're like, well, because we want to be as ruthless as you, because if we do that, then we get to leave.
Yeah.
Like you did. And like, no, what if, like, we just don't murder people?
Yeah, how about that? I love the gal who's like, I just want to dance. And then she dances off in the background.
Mm-hmm. And it's, I think that's sort of a reference to the original Dancing Orion.
That makes a lot of sense.
Which is not a bad, because they, like, because Mariner wasn't there to say, just like the cage.
Yeah.
So that's not bad. Yep. That said, Mariner hanging a lantern on shit is my bad thing.
What else is
which
new?
Is on her shit. Yeah, I know.
Now there's two of her.
Well, I don't hate, you know, look, we're going to do a duplicate thing. And like said in your summary, at least it wasn't the Mirror Universe.
I was so ready. I was so ready for it to be a Mirror Universe episode because legit, we're in the fifth season. We haven't done one. Like, we're due, you know?
I will say, if this show did do a Mirror Universe episode, I would not be as angry as I was with Discovery, because this show would not take it seriously. Like, my whole complaint with Discovery was they took it so serious. Like, it's a ridiculous, campy universe where everyone is sexy and murderous. You can't treat it like it's the most solemn thing.
Mm-hmm.
No.
Oh, the Mirror, you gotta camp it up. With its fascists. No, this is stupid. All of this is stupid.
Let's really give some thought into how this all works. No, please don't. Mm-hmm. If this show did that, it might be funny. It might be like, no, this is all very stupid. Let's pull on these threads. That I wouldn't mind.
The one thing I don't want them to go, and this, if this, then this.
Well, yeah.
Well, because then it's like, oh, well, fascism. And it's like, well, I don't love that. Thanks.
Yeah. I never did like it in the abstract, and now, you know, in practice, I definitely don't.
Well, now every day I wake up and go, fucking fascism.
Mm-hmm.
Again with this?
And speaking of that, like, Captain, she actually calls herself Freeman. She goes by her actual, we find out in this episode that Mariner's her middle name.
Yes.
It's Beckett Mariner Freeman.
Yes.
Because she didn't want people to, and actually, I like that, because, like, no, my mom's a captain. I don't want people thinking I'm a Nepo baby. I'll go by my middle name.
Makes sense to me.
But here she does, and she goes by Becky, which I hate, but, you know, whatever. But the whole thing is everyone in her crew is, like, really well-behaved and really, like, you know, gels as a team and all that. And it's because she says there's no interpersonal conflict allowed on my ship. Just like Gene said at the beginning of Next Gen. Do you get it? It's meta. God. Like, do the concept. I like the concept, but don't say that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's literally a quote from Gene Roddenberry. It's just
spell it out.
So lazy. Mm-hmm. There's a development in the next episode, like the little thing Boimler goes through, where it feels like they wrote down on the board, this happens to him. And instead of it happening to him, at the end of the episode, he just says, this happened to me. Like, they do that so much, and I hate it.
I know. It's so lazy. Ugh.
Yep. It is.
That is the thing that I always come back to with this show. It's so lazy.
Yeah, they go with the first idea, and then they move on. You know, the whole show is poochy.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
Mm-hmm. We've said that before. That's not
complete with Mariner running out and going widdly, widdly, widdly.
Oh, she keeps going like, what up, party people? Like, God, I hate it so much. What was your bad thing?
So there's not a whole lot to the whole Rutherford, robot Rutherford thing in this episode, which I get. This episode has three whole plots going on at least. But, like, that was the thing in this episode that I thought was the most interesting. It's like, what, you know, what happened to this guy? Like, that's the most, how did these two characters veer off from each other that I want to see, you know? Like,
oh, they talked about that.
Dig into this.
Like, they talked about it. Tendi left, and he got so sad that he borged himself up and locked off his emotions.
I must have missed that.
Yeah. Like, like Prime Rutherford is like, shit, That's what I turned into without Tendi. This is going to suck for me.
It's like, okay, I should probably not remove all of my body.
I liked Rutherford referring to him as Otherford. That was good.
That was cute.
But no, I thought everything there was played out about as well as it could be. I don't know that there's a lot there.
All right. It just felt shorted to me, but you know, I don't know. Maybe that's
fair enough. That's good. Well, like you said, it's because you find him the most interesting. You wanted to spend more time with it. I get that.
Yeah. Well, it's like, no, we got to go back to two Mariners screaming at each other.
Mm-hmm. Also, they made him look exactly like Cyborg from the Justice League, and I'm not sure why they did that.
Oh, yeah, that's weird, right?
Yeah, like exactly, like the arm and half the face, mm-hmm. and like the whole, like it's exactly the same design. Just very strange.
Weird.
Mm-hmm.
I guess the fact that they're referencing not Star Trek is impressive.
They do that occasionally, and we're usually pleased with that.
Mm-hmm.
We got a Naomi Wildman name drop. That was not bad.
Made me happy, you know.
Although Boimler's obsession with a magazine article on the 30 under 30, like, mm-hmm. again, is this just today? Is this just 2025? Like, come on.
We barely have magazines now.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's on a pad, but still.
Yeah.
It's like 30 under 30. I guess,
like, having like a Fleetwide magazine type thing makes sense.
No, the concept
having a 30
is okay,
under 30
but
thing doesn't.
That's just like, oh, is this just an Entertainment Weekly article from 1998? Like,
mm-hmm.
just no attempt to dress it up like it's the future ever, you know?
Yeah.
And it's funny in small doses, but that's all they do.
It's really just, they just hammer home on all of this stuff over and over and over again.
Mm-hmm. And at one point when they're talking on the bridge about what could be in this anomaly before they cross mm-hmm. over to the other universe, Boimler names a couple of possible super lame, like, it could be like us, but they have feet for hands. And then he says something else, and he says, or something better than that. And that right there is the writer's room of this show.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Or something better. Nah.
Mm-hmm. I'm just waiting for them to go to Cowboy Hat Universe.
Uh-huh. Well, they do love sort of taking whatever Futurama cast aside 20 years ago.
Is it an infinite number of these? No, just the two.
Mm-hmm. What else?
Let's see.
Oh, there was one Mariner calls out the other one and says, "That's, you know how hacky that is?" And like, okay, thanks.
Yeah, again,
thanks
don't
for saying
fucking
that out loud.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Got
a nice Tilin moment at the end where the whole difference between Tilin and other Tilin is one of them says fascinating and one of them says, I don't remember what she says, something similar.
Yeah. Weird.
And then at the end she says the thing the other one says and they're like, oh my God, it's a, no, I am just messing with you. I'm like, that was good.
that was a joke. I'm like, yeah, mm-hmm. you're still the best.
Mm-hmm. And there's, you know, we got her in both episodes, so that's something.
Mm-hmm. Well, now that we're in the fifth season, I'm really hoping they're like, oh, right, she's here all the time now.
Mm-hmm. We introduced her mm-hmm. at the beginning of season four, then forgot about her for most of it.
Like, at least half the season.
Uh-huh.
No Tilin, you can tell, because it was my bad thing for every single episode.
Yeah, well, this is a valid bad thing.
Mm-hmm. God, is that it?
Mm-hmm.
I like that Tendi has a little model of the Cerritos at her house in Orion. That made me happy.
I mean, of course she does. Yeah.
I just thought it was cute. I like Tendi.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so do I.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Anything else?
Nah, I think we can move on.
All right. Time to talk about Shades of Green. Get it? Shades of Green? That's a callback to Shades of Gray, a guaranteed entry on anyone's worst TNG episodes list. This at least is not the worst episode of Lower Decks, unless you're looking at a list Maggie made where there's a 50-way tie for that title. No, in fact, nothing that happens here has anything to do with that TNG episode. Instead, we're continuing the thrilling Interrobang Orion plot from last episode, because we definitely needed even more swords in this fucking space show. The keepers of this franchise seem extremely determined to feature more swords than Game of Thrones, a show where the titular throne is literally made of swords. So Tendi and Tendi's sister are brought before the Pirate Queen, who insists that they and the Orions play nice, and then decrees that the best way to settle their differences is with a sail race, which I think is just called a regatta. Also, the ships they race with look like that Bajoran sun sail ship from the DS9 episode Explorers, which just made me wish I was watching DS9 again, specifically the episode Explorers, which I particularly love. Instead, I'm watching Swashbuckling. Oh, and sitcom antics as Tendi suddenly becomes crazy overprotective of Tendi's sister, who is secretly pregnant. While all of this is happening, the Cerritos is on Targalus 9, a planet that just joined the Federation and is celebrating the invention of post-scarcity replicator technology by burning all their money and murdering all their billionaires.
Woo.
Which just made me wish I was watching this happen in real life on my own planet. A couple of Boimler's ensigns go missing because Boimler thought he could be a fun boss, and he eventually learns a valuable lesson about himself that he would completely fail to internalize if the previous 41 episodes are any indication. And back upstairs on the C-plot, Talin, I don't know why I said that, probably thinking of Tilo, Talin befriends Rutherford and offers to assist him with that old shuttle he likes to fix up. Then she does too good a job of fixing it up and breaks it again to make him feel better. Memory Alpha tells me that she was assisted in this latter effort by Gudgie, but I must have been looking down to take a note when that happened and I missed it. And honestly, that's one of the best things that's ever happened to me while watching a Lower Decks episode.
I didn't see that either, so like...
Yeah, well, yeah. Memory Alpha's and usually on their game.
You know I'm paying attention when she's on screen, so...
Of course.
Uh-huh.
It must have been just a very brief, like, you know, hovering in the background kind of thing. So.
Or like the scene was cut or something, I don't know.
No, it didn't indicate that in Memory Alpha. It just said, with the help of Gudgie. So, you know, I'm glad we didn't see that, because I hate
I love not seeing Gudgie. I hate him.
Yeah,
I wish he was dead.
And I mentioned this when Badgie showed up last time. I was like, oh, great, this Gudgie character shows up a lot next season. And it's like, if it's situations like that where I don't even notice, then who cares?
Amazing. More of this, please.
Out.
More of this, so less of the other thing.
I like this one a little better than the other one, I'll say.
Mm-hmm. I can see that. The Tendi subplot, this is my bad thing, but like the Tendi subplot of this one, or possibly just plot, maybe it might be the A plot, I'm not sure. A lot of this is built around Tendi trying to protect Tendi's sister because she's pregnant. And I always hate a sitcom plot that's built around a person, two people just not having a conversation. It's, as seen above, the laziest thing you can do in a sitcom plot. Like, I spent 20 minutes waiting for the episode to catch up to where I am.
I will say it's not just lazy sitcom. It's absolutely mainly a sitcom thing. But we've seen Star Trek do it, too. I've heard you make this complaint, you know, very valid, about, like, Discovery episodes. Like, sometimes it's used in straight drama, too, and it's even worse there.
It's always so annoying. Like, just sit down and have a conversation. I love watching two characters have a conversation. It's one of the things I'm here for.
There was a trend in comics 20-some years ago where writers, Bendis did this a lot, but there were other ones, too, did away with the whole secret identity thing, because... Mm-hmm. That was an interesting contrivance in the, like, the 60s or whatever. But, like, we need to, like, it's implausible and it's an irritating source of conflict to say, I got to hide my secret from my mom all the time or whatever. And, like, it reminds me of that. It reminds me of, like modern shows are like, okay, this generated a lot of conflict in old things, but we're more aware now.
Yeah.
And just having characters, like, not talk is not going to land the same way with the audience who has seen a lot of TV. They're just going to be annoyed now.
It's so really irritating. Like, I've been reading, I mentioned this before, I'm reading a shit ton of Spider-Man comics, and God, those things would be so much shorter if he just told people he was Spider-Man.
Yep, exactly.
Where were you,
and it's
Peter?
The same kind of thing.
Nowhere.
Well, the Rhino just robbed a bank, so I had to stop that, and then, you know.
You're an asshole, Peter. No.
Yep. And, you know, again, they got interesting stories out of it back in the day, but it's at a certain point, we've all grown up reading stories like that and watching TV, and, like, we know. So, like, you need to tell different kinds of stories now. But they don't. Also, I like you adopting my, like, her name is De'Erica, which, whatever. But, like, no, they're Tendi and Tendi's sister.
Come back, Tendi. Come back.
Yes, exactly. I desperately tried to work up to that, and I could. Yeah. There were no situations where someone wanted them both to come back. So
yeah.
But I tried. Well, since you're talking about your bad thing, my bad thing, Boimler wanting to be the fun boss was such another hacky sitcom thing.
Sure.
Like the uptight person saying, no, I'm fun. Everybody go do what you want. Mm-hmm, and then they get kidnapped and it's like, and it's all my fault. Yeah. Okay. I've seen this a million times too. And I don't care if they do things that I've seen a lot, but bring something new to it. That's all.
Well, that's the other thing with this. Sorry.
No, go ahead.
The other thing with this episode, like they do it again. Like after his crew gets kidnapped, Mariner literally says, okay, let's just call up to the Cerritos. They'll put a lock on these guys and beam them up. And Boimler's like, no, we can't do that. I can't let people know I made a mistake. It's like, don't tell me there's this stupid, simple solution that you're just not doing. Because again, I'm just wondering why you're not doing it.
I will say that lasted for like one story beat. And then they called back again and they're like, okay, look, we lost our ensigns. Can you please find them? And the Cerritos says, sorry, we've got a lot of other things going on and we can't. You got to go find them. And like, okay, at least they addressed that eventually. Mm-hmm. But you're right. For a minute, that was irritating. I did like the runner where it's Mariner calling up to the ship. And Boimler talking into her combat and what's his name saying,
Ransom,
are you guys sharing a comm badge? I guess that's cute. It's a little weird. And then the second time is like, okay, seriously, Boimler, did you lose your comm badge? Like, that was cute. I like that.
Do you want me to beam you a new one? It's so fucking good.
Yeah, it was. It was good. And it's such a, like, that's exactly the kind of, we're in Star Trek, we have to play by Star Trek rules, let's do something a little odd with it. That was like, that was a joke that is not obvious, but very funny. Like,
yes.
That's the sweet spot, you know? Like, yes, you all have your own comm badges. This would be weird, wouldn't it?
Yeah, right?
But also when you're writing the script, go ahead.
Oh, also, we know they can detect you based on your, like, your comm badge. That is, that's part of the show.
I'm just thinking the logic of writing the script is like, well, Mariner's having this conversation, Boimler's standing right there. He wants to talk like over her shoulder because he's got something to add.
Yeah.
But wouldn't that be weird? It's like, mom, I'm on the phone. But mom, I want to talk to who you're talking to. You know what I mean? Like, it's that kind
of thing.
Tell
him I said hi.
Yeah. But you have your own comm badge. So, you know. It was cute. But yeah, the whole Boimler, he's a cool boss. He gives them pointers. Instead of pointers, and it's it's fucking Leffler's laws from Next Gen, but it's
that's the
him.
Thing. I thought that was dorky enough that it made sense that it was him until Memory Alpha informed me that it was a reference to Robin Leffler, and I just like.
Oh, I caught that immediately. I mean, look, it was at least because she was in like two episodes, and the Leffler's laws were only in one of those two episodes, so like. I could absolutely see you not immediately pulling that. Like,
well, I also did read a series of books where she was a main character.
Oh, well, then maybe not.
Yeah. Shout out to Peter David, who passed away this week, or last week, by the way, and wrote a shit ton of Trek novels I loved.
I would say of the Trek authors, definitely has the highest proportion of good to bad. Would you say that is true?
Yeah.
Like, he wrote a lot, and they're not all gold.
No.
I would say well over 50% of them are good, which not a lot of the Trek authors can say.
No, it's him, the Rhys Stevensons, and Diane Duane.
There's a couple others. I like Christopher Bennett.
Oh, Christopher Bennett's good. Yeah, the Buried Age.
Yeah, I liked Buried Age. I liked the he did a couple of DTI books that weren't bad.
Yeah.
And I thought he did another one. He did one with, it was set sort of after the motion picture and it was following up with some V'ger stuff. And I like that one.
Mm-hmm. What was there was the series that was set on like, original series Space Station. Like it was like DS9, but set in the original series. That was really good.
Yeah. That was a whole sub series that a few authors contributed to. Okay. It was Vanguard.
Yeah. Yes. Thank you.
I think they had three or four authors writing for that. Mm-hmm. And I never read those, but it seems like an interesting idea.
Yeah, I read a couple of them and I really liked them. And then I sort of fell off.
I might have even sort of snatched some of those concepts for Endeavor because I like the idea of it's set on a station, but that's where the ships like dock when they're not like that way. You have the station thing and the ship thing.
Mm. Well, I loved it was like, that idea. Like it was a K7 style one from Trouble with Triples.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I just like the idea of like, yeah, we're at a station, so you get all the DS9 like staying in one place things, but also the ships are here and they come and go, so you also get to follow them on adventures too. Like that was kind of the best of all worlds, I thought.
Mm.
I think Bennett wrote some of those. I don't remember.
Yeah, I'm sure it was in there somewhere.
Peter David wrote so many good Star Trek
and
books.
And Trek comics. A bunch of good Trek comics, too.
Yeah, yeah, very much so. Probably the only good Trek comics until IDW.
Yeah, I would say so.
Yeah.
And even then, oof.
Also, I read I don't remember what it was, a skeet on, that's what we call them, skeets, on Blue Ski, saying like the obituary of every comics creator is like, created beloved character, loved by billions, died with $5.
Died in abject poverty, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. Yeah.
Created a character who made $18 billion at the box office. Has 3 coins.
Died of extremely avoidable medical condition that he could not afford to fix.
Yep. What a time to be alive.
Mm-hmm. Or not in some cases. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Speaking of how much capitalism sucks, this is actually my good thing. This was another let's explore how it works in this world thing.
Mm-hmm.
We've never seen this aspect of, like, we've seen planets joining the Federation before, but the angle they took here was one of the things we do, in addition to just generally celebrating, is we dismantle your old capitalist systems because, hey, post-scarcity, you have replicators and you can just make what you want and you don't need money like that anymore. And,
we're just going to get rid of it.
And, okay, it was a little on the nose that they were burning green dollar bills. Like, come on. Can you make anything that looks vaguely alien? But
I mean,
I still like... Oh, go ahead.
It does instantly tell you what's going on. Like, when we cut to that scene and it's just flaming money falling from the sky, you're like, oh, I know exactly what's happening. Okay.
Yeah, but they said it, too.
Mm-hmm. Like that is true.
They said it in a voiceover. And, again, it's just the fact that they are green dollar bills shaped, like, the same size and shape as American money. Like, you can't even make it a little, like, make it like Canadian money. Make it different colors. Like, something. You know?
Well, it's Battlestar Galactica money. They cut the corners off.
There you go. Just any... Yeah. No. Just green rectangles. It's fine. But seriously, there were a lot of good jokes about that. And, like, one, it's a fun concept that, yeah, they mostly played it for laughs here, but it is something. If you join the Federation, you are now part of the post-scarcity club. You now have basically infinite resources. We have these boxes that can just make what you need. Mm-hmm. And integrating that into your culture will change things. And I like that. I like the whole, like, it's a fun sort of piece of Star Trek that you kind of assume happens, but you never saw. And they got some good laughs out of it. Mm-hmm. And again, the end of capitalism is quite appealing these days. It always has been, but particularly now for who knows why.
Uh-huh.
Like, who could say?
Mm-hmm. I really wish we could have spent most of this episode just kicking around a bunch of billionaires who are mad that they're not billionaires anymore. Like...
I mean,
more
there was
that,
some
please.
Of that.
Yes,
they were
but
basically
I want
behind
that to be the whole episode.
Well, yes, of course. That said, fucking Mariner and Boimler are wearing T-shirts that say "No money, no problems." Which,
yeah, that sucks.
Come on, stop it.
Mm-hmm.
What was your good thing?
What was my good thing? Hang on a sec. Oh, fucking! I love the subplot of Talyn trying to make friends with Rutherford by, like, working on the shuttle. That is so fucking cute. So it basically... Rutherford's still sad about Tendi being gone, and he's sort of, like... He's not even working on the shuttle. He's working on, like, a door that won't open or something.
Yeah, this was their project together, and he's sad that she's not there to do it with him.
Mm-hmm. But she sort of wanders in and just like, hey, I was wondering if you could help, show me how to do this. And it turns out that it's her plan to just, like, be friends with him and, like, make him feel better about Tendi not being around.
She's like, I have identified that this person is very sad because his friend is gone. Well, I can, his friendy. But I can, I can help because I like him too. So I will spend more time with him. And like, that is very good. It's very Vulcan, but also very compassionate at the same time. And
yes.
I love when a Vulcan is not like, I love when they write a Vulcan that completely understands emotions because they have them.
Yes.
And is not like, what, why are you sad? Like, no, she understands and she's trying to help. It's great.
It's one of the things I love about that character so much is that, like, she is absolutely a Vulcan. She also absolutely fits in with the rest of these idiots, you know?
This show, for its many flaws, gets that right better than Enterprise did. Like, and they made Vulcan, like, a Vulcan one of the main characters, and Vulcan culture one of the big backdrops of the whole series, and they fucked it up bad.
Oh, badly. Ugh.
They made our captain just hate them for 98 episodes. Like, why?
He loved it. It was his favorite thing to do. Just he loved two things I love, hating Vulcans and talking about how great my dead dad is.
And stranding a crew in deep space and stealing their engine.
It was completely justified. I did the right thing.
Never forget. Archer killed like 200 guys.
Left them to die.
Yeah.
Anyway. But
no, I like they get it right. They get it absolutely right. And Talin maintains her stoic Vulcanness while at the same time being incredibly sweet and compassionate. It's great.
She then, like, once Rutherford's like, oh, this was like, I get what you were trying to do, but like, this is like, you know, this is my project.
Yeah, it can't be finished, like, because that means if she ever comes back, we won't have it to work on anymore.
Yeah, exactly. So she comes back, they go back to look at it, and Talin's been up all night disassembling it as badly as possible.
And when Tendi gets back and is like, oh man, it's worse than when I left.
Yeah.
That's great.
The other thing I noticed was, the ship has, they basically doodled little pictures of the lower deck kids on the side. And I noticed they added a Talin in this one. That made
That's
me so
cute.
Happy.
I just don't like the drawing on the shuttle thing, but yeah, if they're going to run with that, that's okay.
Yeah, I don't care about that. I thought that was adorable.
Yeah, I guess, but it's a fucking shuttle, man. No, we just got cartoon. We just got crayon drawings from our 25-year-old toddlers. It's fun.
Yeah, it's great.
Okay. What else?
Let's see.
I was still very bored with all the Orion stuff.
Yep.
In fact, when Tendi gets back, they said what were you up to all this time? And she said, just a bunch of boring pirate stuff. I was like, Yep,
absolutely.
I did like, though, two of the plots came together at the end in a way I didn't see coming, which was as they're dismantling the capitalism on this planet, there's all this material wealth. There's gold and jewels and stuff that they're like, well, we don't need this anymore. Money means nothing here. And so they just give this giant pile of plunder to Tendi's family to get back in the good graces of the pirates. And like,
that actually
is a nice dovetailing of two plots there. Good job.
Yeah. Good work. Nice job, Lower
Decks.
Big
pile of treasure.
Here you go.
Yep.
You want a treasure chest with a skeleton poking out of it? Enjoy.
And a little stick drawing of Mariner, probably.
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay.
I like a little stick drawing.
Okay. I liked the weird sort of crystal robot that had them captive. He was the gardener at the mansion.
Oh, yeah,
that was
good. Yep.
Like, I like the design. You rarely hear me say this because the alien and technology designs on the show are always so fucking phoned in. But I liked, he looked weird. He just,
yes.
I don't even know that I can describe the way he looked. It was just sort of like a series of sort of simple polygons like floating there, and it worked for me. And yeah. The character, like, was way more built up than he needed to be in a good way. Like they gave him more depth than just, you know, get in this jail or whatever. And at one point, Mariner even says, well, I'm glad you wrote a little story for yourself today, which was, that was a cute line. It was good.
That's good. That's really good stuff.
He also had a great bit of wordplay where he realizes he shouldn't have locked them up. And he's like, oh, no, because the prisoners died, or he thought they did. But it turned out that Boimler's ensigns just took some stuff that made it look like they died, which is pretty stock standard Star Trek. That was fine.
Yeah.
But the thing hangs its weird head and he says, I have failed as a guard and a gardener. And like, that was good wordplay.
That's good,
good
stuff. Yeah. Yeah.
There's times when the show gets it.
Mm-hmm.
But often it's the little details and not the bigger like story stuff.
Yeah. I mean, that's, you know, continues to be the thing. It's like the potential's all here, you know.
Yeah, well, it always was from minute one.
A couple of other drafts.
Yeah. Well, drafts?
Yeah.
Why do that? We only got to write 10 shows a year, and we got a writing staff of like 8 people probably. So that means one episode each, and we collaborate on a couple, and then go home for a year.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. What else?
There's a dick bat in this episode.
There is. There's another Filmation nod.
Yep.
The Pirate Queen has like this weird purple thing on her throne next to her.
Yep. It goes,
Mm-hmm. It didn't, like, this is a huge nitpick. This is not, I'm not saying this is a flaw of the episode, but it wasn't the right sound. They just had someone vocalizing, and it's like,
that's too bad.
There's a canned sound effect that they used every time, and you should have used that. Mm-hmm. That's all. Yep. What else?
God, is that it?
I don't know.
Boimler's growing a beard in this episode. I don't know.
So there's a whole thread, and I'm pretty sure this is going to continue through the season, where Boimler met his other self, who was the first officer, with a beard, who lifts his leg up over the chair when he goes, okay, he's still just like Riker. You get it? We did all this on the Titan, but we're doing it again. And he's like, but how did you succeed? You need to find your own way. And then he steals his pad. And so he's reading like what his secrets are. And he's trying to be like him. And so he's growing a beard to be like him. And like, okay.
And
this
also
is irritating.
Yeah.
He's also just going to come to the conclusion that he should just be himself, just like he did in this episode. But like I said in my summary, he'll never internalize that because that they never do.
Yeah.
They always say, oh, I've learned a valuable lesson. And then they get
the
exactly
end.
Back. Yeah. And then Mariner has learned to not be so impulsive. And then, you know.
She impulses some more.
Uh-huh. She's just currently, like, constantly set at impulse speed, no matter what.
Uh-huh. Yep.
Did you at least reduce to half impulse?
Never.
I know.
So long, party people.
What up, party people? Yeah, that's how people talk in the 24th century, for sure.
They do. The whole planet full of party people. They're called Parton One.
Really?
Sure.
I would have called them Party on One, but, you know, what are you going to do?
That's the thing. You got to remove a couple more letters. That makes it sci-fi.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
All right. I just think because it sounds like Party On.
I mean, which you should do.
All right. Anything else?
I think that's everything I got for this one.
All right. Well, I didn't hate these, but they could have been better, which is pretty much just the show.
Yeah.
Oh, shut up, Google Drive.
What?
As we're pivoting to the end of the show, I'm like, okay, I'm going to open up the doc that says what's next so I can say what episodes are next. Mm-hmm. And the little list of documents says, you usually open this document around this time. Hey,
ew.
Shut up. Don't
Stop
do that.
It. Leave me alone.
I know that because this is the exact time, an hour after we start the show every week, where I open this document. But you don't need to tell me that. It's weird and invasive.
Tracking my every movement.
Yep. So that said, next episode, we are covering the best exotic nanite hotel, which I'm sure is a reference to what is fucking
Wes Anderson
or something. Like, yeah. And A Farewell to Farms.
Okay. So
who knows? Whatever. Uh-huh. Doesn't matter. None of this matters. Just say Smith. Let's see. The website, as ever, postatomichorror.com. If you want to write to us, we're near the end, so we'll be doing supplemental soon. And Vishal's like, oh, good. You need me to draw a Lower Decks thing. Fine. He's usually very excited. He's just like, that show's okay, I guess, whatever. if you wanna write to us, it is postatomichorror@gmail.com. If you are already contributing to the Patreon and hearing this early, thank you. If not, you still can and hear these episodes 13 weeks ahead of everyone else. And it's patreon.com/Algar. You can pledge as little as a buck. Also, for those of you who are interested, there will be exclusive new Nick and Willikins content posting there for you people in about a month.
Yep.
We've already started writing it. Yeah.
We're going to record some right after this.
Yep. Thanks for reminding me. I forgot already. But yeah, and like I believe the first new material we've done since the game. So
yeah.
If you're into those characters, again, as little as a buck a month, you can hear this stuff like way ahead of everyone else.
Yeah.
So check that out, patreon.com/Algar. And I think that's all for this time.
Yeah. See ya, party people.
The Post-Atomic Horror Podcast is a co-production of Maggie Robotham and Ron Algar Watt. Copyright 2025. Please don't sue us. We're just doing this for fun.